Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast. Captivate the Room, episode number 18. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I teach people how to step into their voice power so they can speak their truth beautifully while making a big impact. You can find out more about me at CaptivateTheRoom.com. And remember, you get 25% off all of my courses with the code PODCAST. Thank you, as always, for your downloads and shares, and simply for being here with a desire to make a big impact with your voice. Today, we are talking with Kathy Caprino. And I have to tell you, I am absolutely delighted beyond measure for this interview. I have followed Kathy's work for several years now, and I think she is absolutely one of the most extraordinary women I've ever had the pleasure to meet. Let me tell you a little bit about Kathy. Kathy Caprino, MA, is an internationally recognized career success coach, writer, leadership trainer, and speaker dedicated to the advancement of women in business. She is the author of Breakdown Breakthrough, The Professional Women's Guide to Claiming a Life of Passion, Power, and Purpose. Kathy's also the founder and president of Elia Communications, Inc., a leading career coaching and leadership training firm for professional and entrepreneurial women. Kathy is also the founder of the Amazing Career Project, an online training course designed to help women globally build successful and rewarding careers of significance. In 2016, Kathy launches her new Amazing Career Breakthrough Certification Training Program for coaches. A former corporate marketing VP, trained marriage and family therapist, and seasoned coach, Kathy is a leading Forbes, Huffington Post, and LinkedIn contributor and top media source on women's career and entrepreneurial success, issues, and trends, and has appeared in over 100 leading newspapers and magazines and on national radio and television. For more information, you can visit KathyCaprino.com and connect with Kathy on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Kathy, welcome so much. Thank you, and thank you for being here on the show.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Tracy. Thank you.
I am just such a huge fan of yours. I have just gained so much valuable information from all the incredible golden nuggets that you have put out over time. I had a really hard time culling down my questions because there's so much I want to ask you today.
Oh, that means the world to me. Truly it does. Thank you.
Well, I want to talk about the book first.
Okay.
Breakdown Breakthrough, an incredible, incredible book. Can you talk about so many great things in there, but one of the things you talk about is hidden crisis that working women face today. Can you share some of that with us?
Yes. Can I give you a bit about how this came about?
Just please.
A 2-minute intro. So as you know, when you read my bio, I had an 18-year corporate career and it was very successful on the outside, but truly challenged and unsuccessful on the inside. But I didn't understand that. I didn't get it. I thought, okay, this is hard. This is bumpy, but maybe I just have to soldier through. And then when I hit 40, it was full-blown crises. But again, and we're going to talk a lot about women, I'm going to make some generalizations about women. I want everyone to know that I'm not painting every person with the same brush. We're all different. But after a lot of years doing this, I know that women often don't see these challenges for what they are, that they're very large red warning signs that you're in the wrong direction, you're doing the wrong thing with the wrong people. So I tried to get some help, therapy, a career counselor. None of it got me out of that work. Why? Because it was very lucrative. Mm-hmm. And at 40, I thought, well, how do I start over? I don't even understand. I can't conceptualize that. So I didn't leave. And 1 month after moving to a bigger house, more financial burdens, was 9/11. And 1 month later, I was laid off in a way that was so brutal. Mm. And I woke up that day. I was in my therapist's office weeping that week. And he said, listen, I know this is the worst crisis you've ever faced. That's how you see it. How I see it is it's the first moment you can choose who you want to be. Mm. Who do you want to be? So I really snapped awake. And from that conversation, I became a therapist and a coach. And I started to talk to women around where I live in Connecticut about how do we thrive through change. And what would I would talk about these challenges, and women would line up, Tracy, after the workshop. And wow. I'm not kidding. They would have tears in their eyes. They would be shaking. And so this is back in 2006, 2007. There wasn't Sheryl Sandberg. There wasn't Lean In. There wasn't Anne Marie Slaughter. It wasn't in the national conversation. Mm-hmm. And women would say, no one is talking about this like you are. I feel like you're inside my head. And I realized, okay, this is like an epidemic. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring new solutions to the table. I want to understand this. So the funny thing about the book is I thought I knew everything about professional crisis. Mm-hmm. So I write a book proposal and I meet with an editorial consultant. She said, listen, this is not your big idea. You really have to research. I said, so to myself, I went, what? And I didn't know what she meant. Like, what do you mean? Go to the library with index cards? What do you mean? But the next day I had an idea. Why don't I talk to 100 women across the country who I don't know, who are not self-selected in my, you know, community, about how women get to professional crisis and how we overcome it. And after those 100 interviews, my world was rocked. Mm-hmm. Half of the hypotheses I had were incorrect about what happens. So that's what this book is. To answer your question, what I found is there are 12 common crises, and they fall under four levels: empowerment or disempowerment with yourself, with others, with the world, and with your higher self. So there are things like, I can't speak up because I had that. And every one of these I've lived, and every one now I've worked with hundreds of women in these. I can't escape this financial trap. I can't get out of this crushing competition. I can't use my real talents. I can't do work that makes a difference. I can't balance my life and work. So these are the things we hear and see, you know, thousands of times online a day. But when you kind of amalgamate them, you see that these are the common crises working women face. Mm-hmm. And you know what? This came out in 2008. It has not changed.
Wow. These are
the same 12 crises, I think, that I see every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And so fear is a big part of this.
Enormous.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were talking earlier, somebody said, I teach a coaching certification course, and someone said, so what stops someone from stretching out of their comfort zone? Is it fear? And, you know, you and I know this. People are incredibly complex. Mm-hmm. And when we try to just slap a really easy solution, because, you know, because of blip, it's usually not complex enough and it's usually not deep enough. But when you look at what holds women back, now you have men and women on your, in your community. Mm-hmm. And I work with great men too, but I do see this with women more. There's a lot of reasons why we're afraid. First of all, most of us were culturally trained not to speak up for ourselves, mm-hmm. not to put ourselves first. I mean, even today, there is so much pushback against women. You know, here's an example. I had a client yesterday who said, I just plunked down $4,000 for my son's college education, the tuition payment. And when it comes to me, I can't even spend $200 for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trained, we're conditioned. And then there is pushback. Forceful women in our society are penalized. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just research study after research study. There's gender bias around how we perceive a forceful woman. So when you add all that up, plus we're not really trained to take these steps, which we're going to talk about, you know, from the book, how to look at how, what I'm wonderful at, what I'm amazingly talented at, and then speak about that. If we can't speak about and stand up for who we really are, we can't move forward, right?
Yeah. Oh, you're singing my song right now. You are singing my song. And of course I do. I do work with women and men, and you primarily work with women. You work with both, but primarily women, right?
That's absolutely
your,
right.
That's your core focus. You know, and that's what I see, that fear, if I step into my voice power, I'm going to be considered a, well, we know. Yeah.
That's it. I mean, I was laid off in some part because, you know, this, and this made me feel so betrayed. I was hired at my last VP job, you know, many years ago to bring in new $1 million clients, to revitalize businesses. Well, you don't do that by being a sweetie pie.
No.
I mean, I did tough stuff. Mm-hmm. I did what my colleague down, the 10 male colleagues down the hall as vice presidents in their spots, but I'm the one call the biatch.
Yeah.
So we're not making this up. No. You know, there's gender bias, but I do want to leave on, you know, leave that thought on this note. It's changing.
Okay. It's that was changing. What I was going to ask. Is it changing? Will it change?
I, you know, my kids are 18 and 21 now, and I even see, even about gender is so much more fluid than it was, mm-hmm. the concept of it as when I was growing up. I truly believe that these younger generations are not, you know, bringing the albatross along with them, mm-hmm. about how we look at women. In fact, I heard this very exciting statement from a gender researcher that years ago, when you'd sit with a group of teen boys and say, "Do you have any girls who are friends?" The answer was no. Now they all have girls who are friends. And he said, "Think about it. Who you're friends with is who you feel you're equal with."
Nice.
So I'm like, oh, I love it. So I do think we're moving in the right direction. But for boomers like us, mm-hmm. you know, working with 50 and 45 and 60-year-olds, yeah, there's discrimination. There's penalty.
Yeah.
For being forced.
Wow. I'm going to come back to the book because I have another question I want to ask. But you said something that I want to ask about, because this is something that really resonated with me. Reinvention. Yeah. That reinvention at 40 and 50 and even 60, does that get really tough? And is it doable?
What a fantastic question. So I think it's incredibly doable. One, because I did it at 40 and became a therapist. And because through my courses, my Amazing Career Project and work, this is what I help people do. It is challenging. It's not a walk in the park. Why? Because the very first piece in reinvention is understanding yourself very deeply. Mm-hmm. And that very first step is challenging for people. For instance, I have a career path assessment, which I think, Tracy, you mentioned that's how you learned of me, 11 pages of questions I wish someone had asked me. And if 30 years ago, and if I had answered them, I wouldn't have made the mistakes I made. But you wouldn't believe, after seeing thousands of these, several things. First of all, people do not understand how talented they are. They don't understand the gifts they have, because things that come naturally to us, we don't see that they're special.
Mm.
Like, you have a beautiful voice, and you know how to help people use their voice. To someone else, that's unbelievable. How, you know, what a gift, mm-hmm. from heaven. So number one, we don't really understand ourselves. Number two, the other thing is, I call it essence versus form. People know how to fantasize about something. I want to be a singer in the band.
Yeah.
I want to run a bed and breakfast. I want to write a book. I want to sail around the world. But they really don't understand the process required to create the right form of work for them that is going to honor the essence that they want. So when we dig deep, often, you know, let's say someone wants to start a bed and breakfast. They have to go and research, what would that be like? They come back and say, oh my goodness, I don't want to run a bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. What I really want is to create experiences for people through this, right? So the reinvention part is hard, because you've got to know yourself. And then through a process of steps, you have to figure out what is truly the direction that's going to marry up everything I've ever been, in a way that's going to meet my financial and other needs. But there is a process, and I teach that process. But you do have to take the right steps. If you don't, you're going to blow it. And I've blown it.
Yeah. You scratch the surface and you think you've got it. And then you spend all this time and energy, and that wasn't, you were chasing the wrong.
I mean, just briefly, nothing's a quick answer with me, is it?
I know, it's great.
When I became a therapist, I talk about this in a video, there's something called the pendulum effect. When people are in pain in their work, they want to run as far away from it as possible. So for me, when I got laid off, I said, I never want to step foot in a corporate office again. I never want to wear a suit. I never want to do any of it. So therapy seemed the farthest end of the world. The problem is, if you don't shift yourself internally now, 5 years later, the same toxic challenges that you had there will appear. And people don't want to hear that. They come to the Amazing Career Project and they want to run. Mm. And I'll make them not run. And I say, we have to improve what you have this minute. And I promise you, when you do that, what you're energetically able to connect with and attract in 6 months is so different. So as a therapist, you know, I worked with rape, incest, pedophilia, drug addiction, suicidality. And 5 years I did this. And all along I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know. And one day a client called up and said, I'm going to kill myself now. I'm going to wrap my car around a tree. And I knew in that moment, I don't want this.
Yeah.
I snapped out of it. We got her help. She's doing much better. But I told my husband, I don't want to be a therapist after 5 years and a master's and $30,000 later.
Wow.
So that's why I'm so passionate to help people do it the right way.
Yeah.
There is a wrong way.
Well, and you are so clear. That career assessment put me on the path to where I sit today. Today, I was coming off of, you know, I'm a single mother coming off, recovering my son from autism, finally really getting back into, okay, you know, this is, we're getting busy. And that was the catalyst for me.
Oh, wow.
Stumbling onto him.
And look what you're doing, how many people are listening to your podcast and your courses, and you're on the right path. This is your passion and your purpose.
So you're spot on. I mean, I'm serious.
I'm so glad to hear it.
I'm serious about that survey. It's not a survey. Assessment.
You know, sometimes every once in a while I'll get, and it's usually a guy who'll say, don't I get a score? And I'll laugh. I mean, I have some that give a score, but not the 11-page assessment because it's supposed to help you understand.
Sure.
You.
Sure.
And you don't get scored in that.
Right. But so important. So important. All right. Let me jump back to the book for a minute, because in the book, you talk about a 3-step holistic model for overcoming all the challenges. We build up all these challenges. So do you have a favorite that you could share with us to overcome? I know that's hard. That's not, you know, that's a loaded question because I know they're all important, but we have to pick one.
All right. One. I'll pick one. But I do want to say, now, since I wrote the book, there are 5 steps. And I just want to say what they are and then tell you. I think one of my favorites. Step back for an empowered perspective, because we only see what's at the tip of our nose. And when we're struggling, that's all we see. Number 2 is let go of the thinking patterns and behaviors that keep you stuck. Mm. Number 3 is say yes to your most compelling vision. Number 4 is try on your direction before you leap. And number 5 is create it smart. I think my favorite, they change every given day, I love them all, is let go of the patterns and behaviors that keep you stuck. Mm. Because if you cannot do that, and I'm going to speak in terms that some people may think, ooh, that's a little spiritual, but if you don't understand how you're co-creating the challenges that you have, they're not random. You know, like one time my friend said, how come every job you have a terrible toxic boss? And then she said, my dear friend, I think maybe you want some therapy. And I was so hurt. How could you think it's me? But I went and got therapy. And what do I have? A problem with authority. That's why I love having my own business. I never really loved having bosses who didn't understand me and didn't understand what I was doing. So the let go step is so important, because when you begin to say, how have I co-created this? And I don't mean we deserve abuse, but I do mean we sometimes open the door to it.
Mm-hmm.
And once you see that you are in control of, not control of the world, but you can shape what happens, then you start to get very confident.
Yeah.
If I can shape myself out of this, shift and shape and refine and change how I operate, wow, what else is possible?
Wow, that's powerful. That is powerful. And you and your online program is amazing. The name of the online program is, tell us again.
The Amazing Career Project.
The Amazing Career Project. Awesome. And that's one of the core components, is helping people figure out what they want. So you mentioned, you said the word leap. And one of my questions was, do people not know what they want? Are they afraid to just take the leap, or both?
It's that and 100 other things.
Wow.
First of all, a lot of people will say, can I take this course when I really have no idea what I want to do, but I know it's not that? Yes. And this process will help you figure it out. So many people, and I know what this feels like. I was a VP of marketing. What am I going to do at age 40 that's going to generate that much money that my family needed? And where do I begin? I couldn't, and the career counselor couldn't help me figure it out either. Mm. So this process helps you figure it out. So they come not knowing. They also come thinking they know, but not believing they can make a living at it. There is a terrible, crippling myth today that if you follow your passions, you're going to be broke and miserable. The problem is, if you don't follow them in the right way, for instance, let's say someone is desperate to become a coach. And I was, you know, after being a therapist, and they hang up a shingle and they have, you know, one certification course under their belt. If they don't understand the realities of the coaching world, of the business model you have to create, of the internet marketing and digital marketing you have to engage in, of the different kinds of products and services you have to create to make a viable living, you're going to fail. So a lot of people follow their passion and fail and say, see, it's because I was passionate. It's not because you were passionate. It's because you didn't understand how to do it. So there's the fear of, I'm going to go broke. There's the fear that I'm old and I'm scared. I mean, I remember when I took my first master's course at age 40, I swear to you, I was sick to my stomach. Mm. I thought, they're going to laugh at me. I'm so old. They're all going to be young. I don't even know if I know how to study anymore. And then I walked in and half the class was my age or older. I ended up passing with distinction. I didn't forget how to study, but we're afraid of so many dimensions of it. Sometimes, too, the spouse doesn't want the other spouse to change. Mm. I want you to stay in your corporate job. I know you're miserable, but it makes a lot of money and it's regular and you have benefits. No, I don't want you to do something you're passionate about because I'm scared.
Yeah.
So it's all of those reasons.
That must make it really hard when you've got a spouse or a family that's, you know, you're already scared and doubting, and then you've got that pushback from someone. That's got to really escalate it even more.
Very hard. And, you know, I hear from so many people who tell me, and they're at various stages of their life, that their parents, for instance, said, unless you study this, we won't pay for college. So it's not just your spouse that can constrain you. It's authority figures that told you what was best for you. Mm. And I'm a marriage and family therapist as well. And in my most viral post, 7 million views, is the 7 crippling parenting behaviors that keep children from growing into leaders. When we tell our children what is best for them, and we don't let them think for themselves, and we don't let them risk, and we don't let them try, guess what happens when you're an adult?
Yeah.
You can't do it. You're scared to think for yourself. You don't have the inner constitution. So, but back to your point, very tough when your family says, why do you want to do that? No, no, no.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. I've heard you talk about so many things, but I've heard you talk about how we get in our own way. What are the main ways women do this?
So, you know, there's 5 that I can think of, but I think there's 500, you know, particularly with women, but men are known to do this. There's something I call perfectionistic overfunctioning. And I learned this term, overfunctioning, in therapy. Overfunctioning is doing more than is necessary, more than is appropriate, and more than is healthy. When you add the perfectionistic layer to it, now you're doing everything and wanting to get an A in it all. And so many, almost every woman who comes to me for help is a perfectionistic overfunctioner. Why? Because great achievers in this world have often been overfunctioners. The problem is at a certain point, it'll break you down. You'll collapse. You just can't keep going, especially when you have children, because now you're trying to be perfect at work and perfect at home and you're killing yourself. So, you know, how do we get over this? Stop trying to be perfect. Choose the things that you can't live without, those non-negotiables that, you know, if you go to your grave and you didn't do that well, like for me, that was parenting. I wanted to be in the fabric of my children's lives. And I knew I wasn't going to take a very senior role that wouldn't let me do that. And I was fine with that decision. Decide what you can let go of and stop trying to be everything to everyone. You're not going to succeed and you're going to just crush yourself. The second is boundaries. And again, I learned this in therapy training. I think one of the most important concepts I've ever learned in my life. Boundaries are the invisible barrier between you and your outside systems, you and your spouse, you and your church or synagogue, you and your work. And the way you look at boundaries that can be helpful is it's on a scale, kind of a gradient on, and boundaries kind of impact, regulate the flow of information and input from you and your systems. So on the one hand, if you're very disconnected, like how many people do we know don't even know the internal life of their children? They're just focused on themselves. So that's disengaged, right? Mm-hmm. They're rigid boundaries. Nothing's getting in.
Yeah.
On the other side, it's, this is what I see much more of, completely diffuse boundaries. Everything is getting in. You mm-hmm. don't know where you end and other people begin. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of parents who are enmeshed with their children. Children, I was enmeshed with my mom. But if you, and this is all about speaking up, literally and figuratively, if you don't know where you end and someone else begins, you're almost not even able to understand what you believe because you're so worried about how they're going to experience it. You know, when you let them down, you're not living your own life.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to form very powerful boundaries. And when we do that, sometimes it upsets the whole system. People are used to us being pushovers. People are used to, oh, Kathy will do it. She does everything.
Mm.
No, I mean, I remember the first time I learned this and started having to say, no, I actually won't do that. People are like, what happened to her? She used to be so, so boundaries. The third way we get in our way is refusing to speak up and stand up for what we want. You know, so many women say, I really want a raise at work, or I really deserve more. I deserve that project. Okay. What did you say about it? Did you go to your boss? Did you build a case? You can't just sit alone in your own head and say what you deserve. You have to fight for it. The fourth is saying yes to things that you should say no to, which is a little like boundaries. Everything you say yes to is saying no to something else.
Mm.
So you really have to understand, what am I going to focus my time on here? Like even in your own business, I did an interview with someone on my Forbes blog about the vital few. So many people focus on the trivial many, all the little shiny objects, you know, even for business. What you have to figure out, what we have to figure out, is what are the three things I have to do this week, this month? Maybe we have to truly move us forward and say yes to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say, here's another thing that women do that stand in their way. They hurt other women.
Mm. Yes.
I still see it. I just did. It just came out, a podcast with Dr. Lucy Gilson, my Best Work, Best Life podcast with Coach Mo Fall. And we interviewed Dr. Lucy Gilson, who is a PhD and department head of management at UConn, University of Connecticut. And we were talking about why is it that women are so hard on women. And you know what she said that I'd never thought of? Women scrutinize in a very difficult, challenging, biting way often other women. But now that we are 100% all the time connected to each other online, the scrutiny is constant. Mm. The bashing is constant. The saying she's fat online, or, you know, it's ever present. And I never thought of that before. So I'm going to give this piece of advice. Every word that comes out of your mouth is either a weapon, right, or a blessing. And you're also either blessing yourself or hurting yourself. Every word that you share about someone else will come back. I mean, I've learned this in scary ways. Like I said some nasty thing about my next door neighbor, about something with their child. I'm not kidding. 24 hours later, that same thing, it was about failing a test, happened to my kid.
Wow.
It is a weapon. Yeah. What, right? And you talk about this, I'm sure.
Oh, I do. I say, you know, of course, I believe the voice is the most vulnerable tool, the most powerful tool, and it can do one of two things. It can wound or it can empower. Mm-hmm. And it's just that simple.
It is really that simple. But the piece to that, I know you do talk about, you can't bifurcate what you're saying about others to what you're saying about yourself.
Oh, you better
believe
it. And
a lot of people, you know, they're so cruel. And then they wonder why they're not happy.
Yeah.
Because cruelty doesn't make you happy. It might for a moment, you know how blame for a moment takes away our anxiety for a total split second. Yeah, well, then you've got the pain of what you just did, blaming. Yeah.
You know, that's just, I just have to pause for a minute because that is so powerful. I am so thankful that you brought that up. Because I know I am not, well, and of course I have been a victim of internet slaughter, you know, the trolls, and so many people have, but that women issue, that runs deep with me, you know, and is that, you think that's directly linked to, I feel terrible about myself, so I think I'll feel better about myself if I say horrible things about you. Do you think that's
I think it's complicated. Here we go. Some people, I mean, I've been asked this a lot. Why do senior women throw other women under the bus at work? And I do think that I don't think we naturally come out of the womb throwing people out of the bus, under the bus. I think that in the corporate world, when many women are scraping to be at the top, and even in industry, especially in industries where there are so few women, then when they get there, it's been such a hard struggle that they're not really wanting to open the door and the floodgates for other women, because some of them subconsciously, unconsciously think there's only room for one of me. So mm-hmm. You can't have it. So I think there's a little bit of that. I think there's when you're scrapingly working yourself to the bone in life, your cup is not full. And when we're not full ourselves, it's very hard for us to be compassionate and loving and empathic. But I have to say, and I haven't really formulated this perfectly, so forgive the bumpiness of it, but what I have two children, a young woman and a young man, and not all boys are the same and not all girls are the same. But when I watched his socialization, there was nothing about biting and being hard on his friends. They didn't operate in that way. I mean, they were competitive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, hierarchically, there's something going on with men that's different from women. I mean, in terms of positioning for mm-hmm. rank in the hierarchy. But there isn't this getting together and talking about other people. That didn't bring joy in his socialization, right? Whereas when you look at girls, you know, in their connection to each other, they're often talking about other people, other women, other mm-hmm. girls, mm-hmm. and what a girl looks like and what a girl talks like. And I just wonder, is there any bit of neurobiology in, I should just go look it up right now, mm-hmm. in that the connectedness that neurobiologically women are shown to have, but more empathy, more communication skill, you know, neurobiologically. But I think I'm wondering if, you know, because it's obvious when they're 3 and 4 and 5,
yeah,
that they talk about other girls.
Yeah.
So I think what we need here, I remember my dad who's passed away, he would always say, we would be biting about something about church or something. He'd say, please don't say anything if you can't say, don't mm-hmm. can't say something. And we'd be like, oh, that's so Pollyanna. But he was that way. I don't think I've ever heard him say, a really biting thing about anybody. And I think that we can train our children.
Yeah.
That, wow, that's pretty harsh what you just said.
Yeah.
And you know what? As I started writing, you know, you hear this. If you are not comfortable with what you just said being on the front page of the New York Times, don't say it.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's brilliant.
Me too. Me too.
I mean, in Forbes, I have to sometimes take a hard stand. And boy, talk about haters. I've had that too. But I never lash back in it as much mm-hmm. as I'd like to in a cruel, awful way. One, because I'm in the media and I really don't want that appearing everywhere. I don't want to perpetuate it. But I think it's training. We have to train ourselves not to use our words that way.
Yeah. And look inside too. You know, look inside too is what I'm hearing.
I think that we, you know, I live in a town that's mostly not working women. And I've had a lot of mean things said to me, you know, when my kids were little. Oh, I wouldn't want someone else raising my child. Really? Is that what I'm doing? Because I'm working? So I think often it's because we're very threatened.
Yeah.
What you're doing is upsetting perturbing my system. It's making me feel badly about myself. Of course, it's not making me feel bad. I'm allowing that comparison to make me feel bad. But you got to look at yourself. Is that the person you want to be in the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that sounds like it links back to fear as well. You know, that scares me. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know who you are. It's not like me. So that's bad.
Right.
Or wrong.
And it's making me, you know, I know people have said, I remember when I said to some woman in the grocery store, I'm going to get a master's degree. She said, why do you think you have to do that? Just like that. And I was so hurt, but now I know what comes at me. Let's put it this way. What comes at you from another person is much more about them than you. Mm-hmm. But to take that personally is a complete waste of time.
Yeah. Valuable. That's valuable right there.
Right?
Yeah.
It's about them. I don't know what her problem was, but she got threatened by that.
Yeah. No, that's good. It just sounds like so much of it. And of course, my whole existence is about voice and communication, but it sounds like so much of your entire world and what the brilliant work you do is about voice and communication too.
I think it is. I do. I mean, we studied communication theory as a marriage and family therapist, and we say that everything is communication. You cannot not communicate.
Right.
Even your silence is speaking volumes.
Speaking of silence, you had a little voice issue yourself at one point.
Right.
What happened?
So when I was about 36 and my kids were, you know, again, little, I started to get, and I'd never had throat sensitivities before. I would lose my voice and get an infection of the trachea. Oh my gosh. So it would hurt so badly. And it would burn in my whole chest and I would have an infection and it would be green coming up. Oh my, it was so horrible. And I couldn't get out of bed. But I remember what was so enraging is I would try to open my mouth to speak to my children and nothing would come out. And I would feel, I can't even describe the feeling, so enraged and so trapped in myself that nothing came out. So what would happen was, I went to doctors. They're like, I don't know. Here's your antibiotics. And as you know, a woman's system's very sensitive. Mm-hmm. We're all sensitive to antibiotics, but then other things would happen. Horrible. 4 years.
And oh my
every
God.
3 months. Every 3 months, I'd be deathly ill. And finally, I didn't believe any of this at the time. A friend said, you need to see an energy healer. And I'm like, okay. Now, of course, I've studied energy healing.
Yeah.
I believe in it completely. So I walk in, the woman knows nothing about my life. I said, I'm very sick in the throat. She said, what are you doing for a living? And I said, here's what, and to me, it was very toxic and I was lying and not myself. She said, don't you know what this is? This is your throat is the seat of your personal communication, you know, of who you are, your person. She said, you need to change jobs. Well, I didn't like that answer.
Yeah.
So I went to another energy healer. And 2 minutes into it, she said, what do you do for a living? I'm like, oh God. She said, you know what this is? This is what you feel. It's a crying within.
Mm.
I started to cry. And I want you to know, from the day I was laid off, 1 month after 9/11, I've never had tracheitis again.
Isn't that amazing?
So I know you believe this too. In Breakdown Breakthrough, the very first chapter is healing your chronic illness. And I've been very much informed by Louise Hay's work, You Can Heal Your Life, her wonderful book.
Yes.
Where she believes that chronic illness, there is an underpinning of spiritual or emotional problem. Mm-hmm. And I am not saying forego going to doctors, but I am saying, and the chapter talks about it, look at the metaphoric meaning underneath, mm-hmm. underneath your ailment. If your back is killing you, how are you not supporting yourself? If mm-hmm. you are, if you can't breathe in, how are you not breathing in the world, right? How is that? If you have a digestive problem, how is it that you, how are you struggling digesting what's happening to you? I interviewed Dr. Neha Sangwan, who's a physician, who said she started seeing patients come in over and over and over with chronic illnesses, and they would come back. I mean, heart attacks, you know, terrible diabetes. And she finally said, wait a minute, what's the conversation you're not having? Mm. She realized they knew, instantly they knew what was making them sick. It was they were not saying what needed to be said.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Oh, I believe it 100%. Now, I never got as sick as you did, but I had, you know, of course, I was raised in a family. I'm a voice expert, and I was raised where we weren't allowed to speak.
Wow. Yeah. You weren't allowed to speak?
Oh, no.
As children?
No, you didn't share dreams, desires, goals, emotions, feelings. No
what way. Would happen if you would?
Oh,
laugh or get
the wrath. The wrath. And, you know, and I'm a voice expert. And I ended up with two energy healers. Before I ever said anything, they said, whew, you're not saying what you need to say. Your throat's torn up.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really fascinating and powerful stuff. And I'm with you. You know, I hear the doctor part, but we have to look within.
And, you know, I do have to share this transparently. In my childhood, I was raised by two wonderful parents, but they were of the old school mm-hmm. that you don't challenge your authority figures.
Yeah.
So I really didn't know how to do it. Gosh, it makes my throat tickle just to say it. I didn't have training about how you can actually say to an authority figure, I don't agree. Mom,
right.
Or
right.
that value isn't mine.
Right.
So I never had that learning.
Yeah.
But now, you know, sometimes we really get it right with our children, you know, and sometimes we just repeat the same nonsense that we got. But with I remember my daughter, I said, I want you to tell me to butt out when she was 13 and 14. I know that sounds crazy, but if I'm too intrusive, too enmeshed, I want you to say the words, butt out, Mom.
I love it.
And she did.
I love that.
Not 50 times a day, but she every once in a while go, Mom, can you butt out of that?
Wow. That's powerful. Yeah, that's amazing. And that's just it. You know, we don't know. If we didn't learn it, we don't know.
But, you know, I encourage everyone listening. There are signs that you're not speaking up. I remember in my master's degree class, I would challenge the professor and I would leave the class. And it wasn't terrible. It was like meekly, could you explain this? I would leave thinking, I think they might drum me out. Wow. Because this professor didn't like it. And I finally told a friend, she's like, Kathy, you're crazy. You just asked a question, but you know, you're very conditioned and you're scared. So everyone who's listening, if this resonates with you, I'm scared to say I don't agree. I'm scared to tell my spouse no. I'm scared to tell my friend, you know, that's hurtful. I wish you wouldn't say that. You know when you need this work.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And while we're on communication, you teach people, you teach women how to be better leaders. And I would think communication, being able to use that voice, being able to ask that question is key in leadership.
It absolutely is. And, you know, the brand of leadership I teach is first you have to lead your own life. So you do all these steps we're talking about. But now when you're leading an organization, it's very much about group dynamics. It's about articulating a vision in a way that's going to engender support. It's about having the tough conversations. You know, a lot of leaders leave it to someone else to have the tough talks, to say, hey, you know, this quarter things weren't what they needed to be, and let me tell you how, you know. Yeah, so you have to not only know how to speak powerfully so that people want to support you, you have to communicate in a way that makes them feel safe, that makes them feel like you are a person of integrity. You are a person to be respected and admired and trusted. And this doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot written about today's leaders. I interviewed a fellow about how leadership has changed now. It's much more about transparency and honesty than it was 50 years ago, which was more autocratic and authoritative. I'm the leader. I know best. We don't respect that today.
Yeah,
we respect people who understand they have deep skills, but they need complementary skills around them. So the communication, you know, I work with leaders is also how we create, allow for vulnerability, allow for authenticity, allow for individuality and diversity. And you can show your strength, but you need to be able to show your vulnerabilities and weaknesses too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's hard for people, I think, that whole vulnerability. Do you see that?
Very hard. Yeah. Well, it makes us, well, do you know the work? Of course you do. Brené Brown.
Yes.
I have the biggest business crush on Brené.
I know, right?
I mean, have there been any more beautiful words, the power of vulnerability? And she teaches leaders. Of course, for all the reasons she talks about, it makes us feel frail. It makes us feel perhaps that I'm going to be victimized. You know, it pulls that armor away, that false armor, mm-hmm. right? And it certainly, our fear of vulnerability separates us from real connection. So anybody who wants to know about vulnerability, check out Brené Brown, her amazing TED Talk, 20 million views, I think, The Power of Vulnerability, and her beautiful books. I have them all here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it does come down to fear, and often too, we know what we understand what we see. So if our role models are not showing vulnerability, are not leading in that way. I mean, truthfully, I never saw a senior woman, honest to goodness, in my 18 years of corporate, I don't think I saw more than a tiny handful of very powerful senior women who I would want to emulate.
Wow.
Now, what does that mean? I think things have changed, but you know, that was many years ago. I'm 55 now, so that was when I was 40. But when you don't see it, it's really hard to be it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's amazing. We, I'm not sure if this is linked to vulnerability or not, but I know you're going to have some insight to me and the listeners on this, especially in relation to women. Do we play small?
I sigh because, you know, I do work with women every day. I feel like there's a very deep urge to play smaller. And I do think, let me give you an example. I interviewed a woman who is the president of Amex Open for entrepreneurs. And I said, I want to ask you, what is the difference between the male and the female entrepreneurs you see? And I think this encapsulates it beautifully. She said, there are four things. When you ask a man why he started a business, it's to make money. When you know, that's my goal. Business is money. And there might be reasons beneath that. I happen to love this, and I love manufacturing, or I love tech. But no, if you ask a woman, it's usually about she wants to be of service in the world. Mm-hmm. And she's turning her mess into a message, which is wonderful. The problem is, if you don't understand kind of the ecosystem that you're in, you are going to play smaller than you need to. And I'll explain what I mean. When she asks a woman, do you think you can scale this idea? Almost invariably, the woman says, I'm not sure. What does the man say? Yeah, I see this as huge. I see this as $20 million, and here's how we get there. And the woman saying, I'm not sure I can scale it, right? The third is, you know, do you have what it takes to lead this? The woman often says, not really. I'm not really good with numbers. I'm not good with this. The man says, I have it all. I have what's required. And he doesn't even say, I mean, I think the answer is I have what's required and what I don't have, I'm going to go find. In general, the men don't say that. They say, I have everything. I have it. I'm not remembering the fourth, but the point is, again, I think there's some training faultiness in our conditioning and training and societal rigid gender roles. But I think that we're afraid to play bigger. And I also see there's fear of success. There's fear of failure, but there's fear of success. The women I work with, they're afraid, you know, in the great book, The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. Do you
Yes.
I think that a lot of women have an upper limit problem, that an upper limit that's even lower than men's upper limit. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, the upper limit is kind of a threshold around money, love, health, wealth, over which you're not comfortable. And I know that was really true for me. You know, do I feel worthy of making $1 million? I feel worthy of multi-six figures. I'm at that. How about a million? You know, I have to push my upper limit up. So, you know, it's funny. In therapy, we want to talk about the root of challenges and why and where it came from. In coaching, I love to do that only as gaining awareness, but then I don't want to stay there. I'm not even sure why matters that much. What I want to do is, what is your upper limit problem? Where are you playing small? Where are you? And sometimes you really have to tease that out. If you ask a woman, what's your biggest dream? The first answer won't be the biggest dream. It'll be the interim dream, the littler dream to the bigger dream. So you'll say, oh, okay, interesting. You want to run a unit of 20 people. What about the division of 300 people? Ooh, I don't know about that. But really, that is the dream. And in fact, the dream is to be the CEO. So sometimes you have to tease it out.
Yeah, so it's not one clear cut. Well, the upper limit problem with women is clearly this.
No, it's, and you know, I do, as you know, generalize a lot, but I am ever so cautious not to oversimplify, because I think that keeps us smaller. I mean, we're not all the same at all.
No, you know? No, no. And I say that constantly. You know, I say that about, I use a phrase, we don't know what you know. Well, I could have five voice experts right here. They don't know what I know.
That's right.
Because we did not share the same experiences.
I love that.
End of story.
I love that.
You know, I mean, we could have even gone to the same college and studied under the same masters. They don't know what I know.
That's so right.
I don't know what they
know. I talk about what makes you you is not only your accomplishments and achievements, it's your traumas, your history, your lineage, your parents, your money story. Nobody has what you have. Not one person on this planet can bring it together the way you do.
Yeah.
But you sure have to know what that is.
Yeah. Oh, it's just back to that inner work. I you said something early on in the podcast, and I want to ask you about this. I actually had this on my list anyway, but your YouTube, of course, all of your video, I have got to recommend you check out Kathy's YouTube videos, if nothing else to see the Shine video. It will change your life alone, but there's lots of brilliant videos on there. But you talk about why women, and you mentioned this at the beginning of the show, why women won't invest in themselves.
Oh.
What's that about?
Yeah. So, you know, again, the why is around how we trained, what we saw growing up, who is managing money, and how were they managing it. I promise you, how your parents did money is almost always how you begin to do money, you know, with secrecy or with pride or with whatever, you have to look at it. But the five reasons I hear over and over, which really blow me away. When someone's talking, for instance, let's use an example, I want to invest in coaching with Kathy or work with Tracy. I hear from women, I need to check with my husband. And what they really mean is I need to ask permission.
Mm.
That irks me. I have never in the 11 years I have coached ever heard a man say, I need to check with my wife.
Mm. Wow.
I've heard him say, you know, I'm going to discuss this because we have some other bills, but he doesn't mean check. He doesn't mean I got to get permission.
Yeah.
So number one, if you want to invest in yourself, who are you thinking you need permission from? Number two, they say constantly, I'm not sure now is right. Here's the deal. Now may not be right, but now's what it is.
Mm.
There's no better time than now, really, really. Is there? Now, there is some timing issues. Like I know some women come to me, I'm ready to launch a business, and they've just had a baby 3 weeks ago. That's not the right timing, really, because you're launching a business. You're launching something already.
Right.
In the form of this crying newborn, you know. Timing does impact. But women will always say, I'm not sure it's the right time. They'll also say, I'm not 100% sure on the return on this investment. In order to invest in yourself, you have to risk a little bit.
Yeah.
You have to risk.
Yeah.
Nothing sure. Just make sure you will return on the investment by using it. And you know what? We use everything we learn. You know, here I'm not a therapist any longer, but it was life-changing and I use every minute of it. A lot of women say, I'm scared of scaling. I won't be there for my kids. I'm scared.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to delegate too well. They don't know what scaling can look like because they think they have to do it all.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, even if I have that extra money, I feel guilty.
Mm.
I use it on myself.
I can relate to that one. Boy, where does that come from? Again, is that conditioning? Is that no clear-cut answer? Or is it a lot of things?
I do think it's some of the messages we got in our childhood. I do. I think we're nurturers neurobiologically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the hunter-gatherer thing is not just a thing we made up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are alone in the caves with women taking care of the survival of our children. Well, when you've got those hardwired priorities, I think it can be really hard to say, you know what, I need to be my highest self so I can be your highest self. I mean, why do airplane attendants have to tell us to put the mask on ourselves?
Right.
I mean, think about it. In that 3-minute thing where they're talking about if a plane goes down, that's the thing they choose to say.
Yeah. Isn't that unbelievable?
Right. Because we don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a tough one. I think that's a core, big core issue for many, many, many women.
Well, you know, here I am. My kids are grown. My daughter's home from college just for a week. And I'm working right now incredibly busily launching 3 different things. I still feel the word is guilt. Yeah. She would be upset to hear it, that right now, normally I have hours in my day that I can do what I want. That's why I love my business. Right now, I'm pretty jammed up. And I still feel guilty that I can't just take off and do, you know, go shopping the when I want. But my husband, he works from home. He doesn't feel guilty. The word guilt, the concept guilt would never occur to him.
Isn't that fascinating?
I know it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Well, Kathy, you are just, I could just sit here and talk to you I'm so honored because I know you're in the middle of a launch and to have this conversation, and I just could sit here and talk to you all day long.
You too.
You bring so many golden nuggets and so much value with everything you say.
Thank you so much. Really, that means so much to me.
You are just such a treasure. And I want, you know, I've already shared some of your information with my people, and I want you to tell us all the best ways to find you. I know we've got the website and all kinds of things. So where's the best place for people to go looking?
I would say KathyCaprino.com. That's my website, the kind of the hub of it all. I would also ask you to look at the Amazing Career Project, and that's at amazingcareerproject.com. That's my 16-week reinvention course, career transformation course. I also have a weekly podcast, and that's at Kathy and Mo, M-O, Mo Fall is her name, .com, and we're interviewing some fantastic people. Tracy, we'd love to have you.
Oh, yes, and I forgot to even mention the podcast.
Yes.
Yes, the podcast is phenomenal.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We're having a ball. So yeah. Fun, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Because I'm sure you do too. I get tired of hearing myself talk.
Right.
I want to hear a brilliant, beautiful expert, you know, who fills in all those gaps, who yeah. just is so knowledgeable. The other thing I'd send you to is my own blog on my site and my Forbes blog.
Yes.
And I would love people to connect. LinkedIn, I'm like an enormous ambassador for it. I'm a big fan, big following there. So link in with me. I would love to connect on Facebook and Twitter too.
And YouTube.
And YouTube. Don't forget it.
Yes. Yeah. And YouTube. It's all of it's in your name. YouTube, I believe, is the YouTube channel is in your name as well.
That's
yes.
It. Okay. It's all in my name. Okay. You search Kathy Caprino. You'll find a lot of stuff.
Oh, I've never seen so much valuable information put out by one brilliant entrepreneur as I have your work.
Wow.
It's a body of work that is amazing. And it's just been an honor for me to get to spend this time with you. I am so grateful for you.
For me, Tracy. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you all for being here. As always, I appreciate you and your shares and your downloads and just for your willingness to be speaking your truth. Just remember, do it beautifully.